Hello everyone! Today we have a very special episode for you. It's a two-part episode in one. First, you're gonna have Rita, myself, and Yesenia talking about the Democratic National Convention, doing a recap, spilling the tea, sharing all the things that happened, the speeches, what was missed, and also how Yesenia should have been there, but she didn't go. Spoiler alert. Then we're going to go into a very special conversation with Ana Rosa Rizzo-Centino. She's an amazing community organizer here in the California Central Coast, and she's going to be one of our special guests, guest of honor, and we're going to be talking about how she herself is a chica politica, her experience running for office as city council, how she has organized unions, labor workers, and her perspective on the current political landscape. So stay tuned for this very special episode. Thank you for listening. So let's do this. Hola, chicas políticas. How are we doing? It's an exciting day. We are approaching less and less days on this campaign trail, and things are really happening, Rita. Cuéntame, what is going on? What did you think of the DNC?
I have mixed feelings, but...
Let's hear it. Let's shake it up. Let's hear the mix of the feelings.
Well, let's start with the positives.
All right. Let's start with the positives. Cuéntame. What are at least three positives, would you say?
2 months ago or a month ago, we had no idea that this could be possible. We didn't know that Democrats could, you know, all come together and really celebrate a new candidate and really get excited about it. And we saw a lot of excitement. I think that's like the biggest positive. I've read this like article of this hater that writes for a local newspaper, for the New Times. I don't remember his name. It's like, I have no idea. It doesn't matter. His name does not matter for history. For historic purposes. This hater always just writes like the most ridiculous, like MAGA stories. It just does not make sense. And what I could swallow from his article was that he was ready to watch the DNC, and this was before the DNC, and he said that he was just ready to eat his popcorn and see how Democrats would just make this a disaster, and there's no way that they're gonna, you know, support Kamala, and he was just ready to see this, you know, this ship explode on live TV, and we didn't see that. So the whole time I was just like, while listening to like the best speeches, I was thinking of this hater, like probably, you know,
haters
really
hate, Rita.
Really struggling and in pain, seeing like all the excitement.
If you don't have haters, you're not doing it right.
Yeah.
So let the haters hate. It's not looking good for the Republicans. It's not looking good for Donald Trump.
I don't know. The polls are saying, and we also want to.
I mean,
the polls,
it's close. Right? I mean, it's close. Still, let's not get comfortable.
But I mean, for someone that has 34 felonies, it shouldn't be this close.
But you know what, Rita? We're here. We're here, and it speaks volumes of where we are at as a country, right?
Yeah.
That there is this great divide. At least now, with President Biden stepping down, there is hope because those numbers. It wasn't that close before, right? So I think the DNC was able to capitalize on a lot of excitement, a lot of hope.
Yeah.
And it was quite interesting to see the lineup of folks that came through for the DNC. Who were some of those speeches? Who were some of those people that you were surprised to make an appearance?
I really, really like how many people came to speak and support Kamala and Walz, or Kamala and Tim Walz. I really, really like the Obama speeches. Those were like my top favorite. I was very surprised, like positively surprised by Hillary. I don't know why. Last speech that I remember from Hillary was just not exciting to me. Or I have this idea in my mind that she was obviously the candidate that should have won against Donald Trump, but it was not you know, as exciting as I heard her this at the DNC.
I think the stakes are different. I think when you are a candidate and you are running, that you do hold back. Whereas, like, now she has nothing to lose. And ultimately, there is something personal there with Donald Trump. The reality of, you know, she lost an election that she should have won.
Yeah.
And the reality of where we're at. And I think that was one of the common themes of all the speeches, Rita, that... Look, we already know what a 4 years with a Donald Trump looks like.
Yeah.
We cannot afford to have another 4 years of that. And I really love what Stevie Wonder said. We must choose courage over complacency. It's time to get up and go vote. And it was just one of those things that whether it was Hillary, Michelle Obama, Obama himself, is the reality of the writing is on the wall.
Yeah.
We have a choice here.
Yeah.
And this man, Donald Trump, has a track record of not being a great leader, creating a huge divide in our country, which we're still seeing it, right? Like, let's not get comfortable, but there's a lot of work still to be done. Was there a specific message that you really took with you to say, yeah, like, this is where we're at?
No, I mean, you know me, like, I'm very cynical, so I go into the... Life has turned me cynical. I was thinking about this yesterday. I really feel like I'm turning really, really cynical, but maybe because I'm getting closer to my 40s.
We'll talk about that. I really did appreciate the representatives, folks on the side of the Republican Party who had the courage to come and step foot on the DNC stage and show up as a Republican. I think I would like to see more of that, to be honest with you, Rita, because... I've said this before on this podcast, is that I would like to think the Republican Party has been hijacked by MAGA, but then the reality is you have to think about it as a party when you are co-signing and you are silent on a coup, on the stealing of votes, of all this crazy things that have now gone to trial, and we know, and there's evidence, Donald Trump taking bribe money from the Egyptians, you know, all of these things that you have to wonder, what the hell is going on with the Republicans? And I give respect for these folks that did go on the DNC stage, because this is where we're at. This is not your normal election. Yeah. Literally, we have democracy here on the ballot. We have the sanity of our country. And most importantly, Rita, I've said this before, we may not have another election.
Yes. And I think the way that it was framed at DNC was like beyond that, because that's the kind of message that we've heard for a long time, and it really hasn't moved people, right? Because it's so weird. It's like when someone's like, hey, there's something that's gonna happen and you've never seen it before and you have to be afraid of. It's just really hard because you've never seen it. So it's, you know, more and more I think we're getting less empathetic, so we can't really put ourselves in that situation. But the DNC had this message of, like, there's something that we haven't seen before that we could have in a positive way. Like, the things, and I think that's what I really like about Hillary Clinton's speech, because she was saying everything that we wanted with Hillary running, like the part of getting a woman into the biggest office in the world, that could happen. And that's something that so many people have, so many women especially, sadly not everyone, but especially women,
childless
have been
cat
wanting.
Ladies, right?
Yeah. But the women have been fighting for 100 years, right? So it's like you can touch to that feeling because you have been wanting to see that, and you've seen it in different offices, but not in the highest office there is. So.
To see a woman of color, right? Asian, black woman.
Yeah.
And that's where it gets really interesting too, Rita, is that we have someone, once again, very mirroring to what happened with Hillary, someone who is qualified, right? If we put resumes side by side, this woman, Kamala Harris, has a track record of making hard decisions, leading, doing her time, paying her dues. And so now she's put in a position where she could be our first woman president, which would be monumental for this country. I think, especially with the issue on abortion, that I think we're, as women, we are being pushed to really show up, because we have seen how much damage can happen in a 4-year term.
Yeah. And I really like how the Obamas really Michelle, I think Michelle is probably mm-hmm. the best speech, mm-hmm. in my personal opinion, of the convention, of any convention that I can remember. Mm-hmm. Maybe the first one that Barack had, you know, maybe like back in the day was yeah. really good. But this speech from Michelle was just so good to me. Like, I really got mm-hmm. connected with her speech. And
what was it about her speech?
Well, it was just, she was very clear. She was talking to people where they're at, and she mm-hmm. was not painting this. She didn't talk about Trump in any sense other mm-hmm. than, you know, telling him about the black jobs.
Oh my gosh.
Which was great. Gosh. But she was really talking to people about their needs and how we need to recognize that, mm-hmm. you know, the work that needs to be done, it's for the people that are currently struggling. And mm-hmm. I think that's where we need to speak to more and more.
The reality of where Americans are at.
Exactly. Talk to that rather than, you know, this, like, democracy is leaving. It's like, okay, what do I care about democracy if I can't get meat mm-hmm. on my kids' plates mm-hmm. this week, right? So I think, and her also being from the get-go really clear about Donald Trump's racism and how Michelle and Barack were these, like, highly intelligent, capable, mm-hmm. experienced people who just happened to be black, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's the same with Kamala, that she's this very experienced, she is a smart politician, she's able to fundraise, obviously, mm-hmm. she's been able to campaign, obviously, mm-hmm. she just happens to be a woman and happens to be of mixed race. It's a color, a woman of color. It's just, like, so good to see.
And I will add this too, because I think for me, as a child of immigrant parents, as someone who is a exactly. Latina, someone who will maybe one day raise a biracial child, mm-hmm. I was given so much hope and excitement that, like, I saw myself in the story of Kamala and being a biracial woman, being raised as a child, hearing her sister speak, hearing her husband speak. Mm. And it was one of those things that I really appreciated that I've been seeing on the messaging is humanizing Kamala, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's been a lot of making her into a villain. And
which is what Republicans do, you know, up and down the ballot.
Right. But we saw this side, the softer side of Kamala, which mm-hmm. was really exciting to mm-hmm. me. And it just, I feel when I see a Kamala right now where we're at, a woman, a biracial woman, someone who is proud of her roots, regardless of if a Donald Trump is saying, look, she was never black. She never claimed that. Now she wants to be black, right? Now all of a sudden now she's riding on the black train.
Oh my gosh.
But the reality is she has been true to herself, and I think that's really inspiring as yeah. a woman of color. Yeah. And seeing that this is the America that many of us know and have experienced, that
yeah.
you can show up authentically in your spaces. There are challenges, right? Mm-hmm. We're not gonna ignore those challenges, because mm-hmm. we're even seeing it that you could be the most qualified on the greatest job, apply for the job, and be berated by things that don't, I just can't even believe some of the nonsense that is being brought up with Kamala. But it's expected. And I really also
yeah.
enjoyed that was center stage, the acknowledgement that, look, because she is this, there is going to be that. And also yeah. that spoke to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it spoke to you, Rita, because mm-hmm. we go through a lot of shit.
Yeah, every single freaking day. I was telling my husband, I was recapping yesterday to my husband how I was, like, pulling weeds and watering the plants outside my new house one day, and this couple comes, this family, this whole family comes to troll me. They're like,
stop it.
Well, they didn't know. I don't know if they knew they were trolling me, but they came and they're like, oh, wow, the sale sign was taken. I guess they bought it, and they see me, like, on my knees pulling weeds, uh-huh. watering the plants, and
oh my gosh,
they asked me, hi, wow, the sale sign is gone, do you know who bought it? I'm in the garden.
Uh-huh. And this is very typical.
What do you think I'm doing here? I'm working here. And I told them, like, yes, we bought it. And they're shocked in their faces. Of, like, and they asked, they didn't say wait, they said, what?
Come again? Because yeah, I don't think exactly. I understood you.
Who bought it? And I was like,
I bought it. It can't be you, Rita. Yeah. So let me come again.
And I get it. I get it. I wear like the most simple clothes and things. But
Rita, what were you expected to wear? A gown while you're pulling weeds?
No, I wear the same clothes everywhere. So, but dude, that was just one thing. And then the other day I went to this place for children and I'm with my kid and I'm paying for him to go in. And this is here in this town that I live in. And it's like, I go to pay for his fee and they tell me, oh yeah, it's expired, you have to pay again. I'm like, okay. And then the girl, the very young girl, looks at me, looks at my kid and says, oh, because you're the nanny, right?
Oh my Lord.
Yeah.
Oh no.
And it was so fast.
What did you feel though? Did you, in that moment, feel something?
Yeah, in my mind, I went back to every single friend that has told me that that has happened to them. And I was like, it happened. I'm part of the club. And I was like, no, I'm not the nanny. And she was really young. And she said, she totally felt it too. She felt that. And she said, oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, it's this much. Yeah.
Wow.
I know. And this is just in the last, you know, month.
People, and that's the America too, Rita, that we need to talk about. The reality that these are, I know, maybe to some people listening to the podcast right now, they may see that as such small things.
Yeah.
But they're very big things for us because it's like, before you even get to have, hi, how are you doing? Or welcome to the neighborhood. Or ask, even just giving an opportunity to say, hey, like, this is my home. But this is not uncommon. The projections.
It's super common.
It's super common to people to make assumptions on things. And check yourself before you make the assumptions. You know, we're living in a time where diversity and opportunity does happen, believe it or not, for people of color.
Yeah, and, believe it or not. And we just happen, I own this house, I just happen to be brown.
Yes, oh my gosh. I'm so sorry that happened, Rita. And it is very common for folks listening to this, if you are local here in SLO County, it happens. It happens a lot more often than you may think. And if this is your first time listening to something like this, it's because your friends of color, we keep a lot of things to ourselves.
A lot.
It's almost just survival, Rita.
You just don't have the time either, right? Mm-hmm. We would go into a full-on episode about all the things that happen, right? But you're right. Like, those are the type of things that if someone on a stage not only has gone through it themselves, but can speak and give you those, like, in between the lines, you know, where you know, oh, I got it. I know where that's coming from. Mm-hmm. Like, you can really feel represented in some
way. And it's on different layers, right? The reality of, like, you get a woman. As women, we do go through things in life. As biracial children, I've heard from folks that are biracial, you know, that identity, that struggle.
Immigrant, as a person of color.
I really love that, Rita, the immigrant component of it. Because to me, I will always look at the United States as a country of immigrants, whether that is being mistreated or whatever may be. Like, that's part of what makes the U.S. so phenomenal is the reality that we are better because we are diverse. And so let's hear it on the flip side. What were your concerns?
Speaking of immigrants, one thing that I've noticed, I've heard this from some commentators that are Latinos themselves, but also cover a lot of immigration issues, that the Democratic Party as a whole, but especially during the DNC, became really obvious, is that we have lost the debate on immigration. We have lost it, and because Democrats have not been able to articulate the problem, and they have not been able to articulate the solution around immigration. And so during the DNC, the major speeches, none of them talked about a path to citizenship, and we didn't talk about DACA the way that we've talked in previous.
Kamala did touch up a little bit on immigration, which was not anything new. It was just bringing back what Biden had presented and that he hopes to sign it into law. So Fun story. But I had the opportunity to go to the DNC. Mm-hmm. I did not go.
Oh, really?
And my partner was having massive FOMO. They were like, we could have been there, and you should have been there, and look, this is monumental, this is historical.
You had a week of that.
Yes, and I was like, are you having FOMO? I'm like, I have a lot of things to do, and, you know, Rita and I do so much, and don't feel bad for us. We're just getting a glimpse into our lives. But, you know, I always try to find the humor in
you
things.
Were like, I'm busy.
I'm busy. And I, you know what my comment was with that is, the DNC is not ready for me. The DNC is not ready for me. And you know why, though, Rita? Because I'm with you on this.
Yeah.
As Latinos that mm-hmm. attended the DNC, mm-hmm. we should have been cozying up and having those hard conversations. Yeah. Of, you want to court us? Yeah. You want our vote? Yeah. You want our support?
Yeah.
This is our agenda for immigration.
Yeah. Yeah,
we're not going to give you our vote until we know X, Y, and Z. And this is our expectation for this first week that you step foot in office.
Yeah.
And holding that accountability, which we did talk about in our Brat Summer episode. Mm-hmm. But it has to be intentional, Rita. Yeah. We're not going to be given much if we're not asking for it, or even to the point where we are, what's the word I'm looking for? It's still really early. Forcing outcomes.
But there has been legislation written, but there's like a lack of, I think, will that became obvious to me after the DNC. Like it wasn't even top of mind, because I mm-hmm. think we have lost this debate for so long now that we are talking about border security, mm-hmm. just like Republicans were talking about border security, you know, 8 years ago, mm-hmm. which scares me, because if Republicans right now are talking about mass deportations, is that what the Democratic Party is going to be talking about in 8 years from now?
Like what happened during Obama? What?
Yeah, exactly. So I that concerns me a lot personally.
Not funny. I'm just laughing because of the hypocrisy.
Exactly.
La hipocresía, yo sé. Basta de la hipocresía.
Exactly. It's not enough to get Dolores Huerta out there. Poor Dolores. She can't be there on the front lines for the Democratic Party. We really need policy. We really need policy.
But you know what it is too, Rita, and this is, and I don't know if maybe this is another episode, but it's like, what, Dolores is like 92, 94, 95. And I will give this to her, and Rita and I, being community organizers, doing a lot of stuff in the community, we recognize there's a lot of behind the scenes work that happens that public never gets to see.
Yes.
What's really amazing about Dolores Huerta is that she's pushing 90 and still being consistent in her messaging. But where is the younger generation? Who's the next? Like,
well, you didn't want to go.
Well, the reality is, that's a good point, is right. I couldn't go because I'm preoccupied with doing change at the local level.
I know,
right?
We
and
don't.
So that's have, what. What's so that's what yeah. I'm saying is that, for example, Rita has a lot on her plate. I have a lot on my plate. We need more. And you and I don't have to be the heroes like that. I don't need to go to a DNC.
And we also need young leaders that are able to go into those offices, like House of Representatives. Like, we have AOC, but even AOC can be it for everything. Mm-hmm. And we have seen her limitations, and we have seen her, like everyone, right? We can't have everything on one person. But we need those Spanish-speaking, those immigrant, those Latinas.
Sure, you know, I'm in Latinos. A Latina for Harris group, and there were Latina delegates there, and that's what.
But speaking, we need them speaking.
Well, we had Eva Longoria, right?
Oh my gosh,
we had Eva Longoria, which was, and this goes back to like our previous episode, and this is like, this is where we can criticize. Yeah. Where they had Eva Longoria speaking for a very, very short time. I enjoy Eva Longoria. I've seen her shift into this more intentional Latino agenda to have progress for us.
Mm-hmm.
But we should have had more time, number one, and we should have had more than just Eva Longoria.
Yeah.
Right? There should have been someone who has invested in politics, has been a community organizer.
Yes.
Maybe you have next time DNC, maybe you have chicas políticas go up there if you really want the Latino. But we need more representation, you know what I'm saying? We need more time.
Yes.
You want us to support you. Yeah. Give us more time.
Yeah.
Court us some more. Throw in some vegan chocolates in there. Throw in some flowers. Show us.
Yeah.
Show us with action what it is that you want from us.
Yeah.
So that when the time comes to show up and vote, we will show up for you. But this is the part where it's scary, Rita. I think for us Latinos, there is a lot at stake at this election and every election. But the reality is, I think under a Donald Trump, we will have more deportations, more extreme consequences for our undocumented community. With Kamala, we may see that. It may not be to the same xenophobic, harsh way. Hopefully, I don't even know. I wish I could confidently tell you that we're not going to see those type of things at a Harris, term.
But that's scary, right?
It is scary. It's the picking of the less of the two evils on that specific subject.
And others, but yeah.
But that's the reality where we're at. And it's like, maybe those conversations did happen at the DNC, but I think you have to be tactful. And I think you have to put it out to the public to say, hey, we're not just being courted because you're talking to us pretty. Me vas a bajar el sol, las estrellas. You're going to bring down the moon and the stars. But it has to be intentional. And I think did you hear of any intentional organizing happening for immigration reform at the DNC?
No, and that's why
I'm telling you, Rita, next DNC, you and I are going.
Dude, I'm tired.
4 years from now.
But Latinos are 19% of the U.S. population, right? And we know that if you mobilize half of that, whoever you are, you can win this election. You can win any election.
Yeah.
But I think there's a fear also to like what that means. And that's what I'm saying. The Democratic Party and Democratic candidates have just lost that debate. And it's okay. If we don't accept that we have a problem, if we don't accept that we have lost it, we are never going to do anything to fix it. And across the board, I think local races to presidential race, there's not have been enough effort for those that are outside the community to really understand the community, right? And so hopefully this podcast gives everyone like a window into understanding the community and why we're so mad about so many things and why we're so happy about so many things, like how we also can live in those two truths, right, and jump around it and laugh about it. Because there's no other choice for us as immigrants and Latinos and sons and kids of immigrants. But the other thing that I was disappointed about was obviously not hearing from, not giving space for Palestinian voices at the DNC. Till the last minute before Kamala went up to the stage, I really was hoping that she would. I was like, how can they fix it? How can they
fix it? There's still time.
I was like, there's still time. There's still hope.
Day four.
I was like,
we can make it happen.
If she walked, like in my wildest dreams, right? I was being so naive. In my wildest dreams, I was like, if she would go on the stage with the representative from Georgia that wanted to give. I read the speech. The speech said absolutely nothing that would trigger anybody, not any centrist either. And it spoke about the hostages, the Israeli hostages, spoke about the safety of Israelis. Mm-hmm. Like it had a bigger message than people wanted to.
Why do you think there was no intentional invitation to have that platform?
So I talked about this with a couple of friends, and I really, like, the long story short, I think right now it's timing. So there are only, like, 2 months before, and actually there's less than 1 month before voting starts happening, right? Yeah. In some states, those damn states will start voting in September and get everything crunched in the timeline. But there's less than 1 month to get to people before they start voting. And you need a lot of money. This is the cynical part that I know happens. You need a lot of money in the next month, like a lot of money, because we don't know how to get people out to vote or convince people out to vote other than throwing money
and
at
just,
it.
And just so that for folks that may not be like, what you're thinking, well, why does it take money? One of the best ways to predict the outcomes of an election is to see how much money is being spent.
Well, and you do need money to, like, reach. You need money to pay canvassers. You need money to...
Materials.
You need money for those small, like, campaign. We know from 2020 that it was down to some precincts to a handful of votes that made that precinct go to Trump or go to Biden, right? So you will need so much money to get to all of those precincts in the most rural of areas from here till when voting starts, which is in less than a month from now, and from here till November. And I think the Democratic Party is so tied, well, all parties, but in this case, the Democratic Party is so tied to money that they didn't want to risk any major donor, and they didn't want to, they need the money. And it's really sad because it makes us put, like, it makes candidates put their morals to the side, or it just makes the status quo continue the way that it is. So I don't think they want to risk it, but I think it was more of a loss than an actual gain, because there's so many young people that you've lost by doing, and a lot of progressives as well, that you just put off by not allowing all voices and recognizing that this is a big tent. That said, we know that historically, people under 34 years old have never come out to vote. So they've had to put in a balance, like, okay, do we allow this voice that we completely forgot to include right now as pressure is mounting to do that?
The woman who had written that speech, did she already endorse Kamala?
I think she's part of the uncommitted.
Uncommitted.
Yeah.
Playing
devil's advocate. No. That speech was to support Kamala, was putting in light how awful a Trump administration would be. Mm-hmm. Like, that would have been the best speech. But
playing devil's advocate, and, you know, not saying that I agree or... Playing devil's advocate, I think with the DNC, all the people that took the stage is because they were already committed to Kamala. They already had given their endorsement. They were 100% backing her up. So I think that's hard. I think the reality
is... But this speech was supporting Kamala.
But did she give Kamala's endorsement?
I don't know.
And I think it has to be one of those things where everyone on stage was 100% endorsing Kamala. It wasn't the not sure about you. And the reality is, you know, there were protests outside of the DNC.
Exactly.
There were press conferences happening in regards to this leading up to having a Palestinian voice. And that is one of the biggest issues in our current time, that people feel passionate about, people feel called to action right now in this election, and the right space to do it was at the DNC, is with the presidential candidates. And what did you think of her response, though? Because she did talk about Palestine. She talked about what's happening.
Yeah, it's just not... It's even more concerning. But I think that's as... Which is the concerning part, is that what she said at this stage will be the policy if she gets elected, right? It won't be... She makes different feelings, which it was like, we will continue sending bombs, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Palestine has the right to self-determination, which they don't call it that way. They call it a right to return. But self-determination and sending bombs cannot be put together. And we can't talk about a ceasefire and getting humanitarian aid where you continue sending bombs. So... But that's the concerning part for me.
And I was, my heart was with Rita as I'm hearing this portion of it, of Kamala's taking the nomination and addressing the American people. And I felt like it was very on brand with what's happening right now with the Dem part, the Dems in office, right on top.
Yeah. I
wasn't hearing anything new.
That's why when you asked me, like, was there anything new? No, there wasn't. What the one argument that always, like, makes me, like, just, like, ugh, stop, is when people
her, do you think she did call a ceasefire? Because she did say, because now is the time to get a hostage deal and a ceasefire deal done.
Yeah, but it's just, you can't say both things. Like, the State Department has a huge leverage on a ceasefire, and that's stopping the sending weapons. You know, Israel has enough weapons to destroy, continue destroying Palestine infrastructure.
What gives hope?
And you're really reaching in there.
What gives hope is the part where she does say Palestinians can realize their right to dignity, yeah, security, freedom, and yeah, self-determination.
And look, I've heard some from Palestinian friends who have said, that actually gave me hope too.
And this is the thing, Rita and I have, not only are we community organizers, we're doing lots of things, we also have personal experience in the political world.
Yeah.
And it's so damn hard to be in there because and we know this to be true, Rita. She could be up there. Her messaging has to be on brand with the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
Right, where her bread and butter is at.
Yeah.
So there has to be that alignment to the party.
Yeah.
Then it's the alignment to the donors.
Yeah.
It's the alignment of, we have to win this thing to even have a shot.
Exactly.
So it's like nothing completely is exactly as it may seem.
Yeah.
And it goes both ways. It could be she wins this thing and we may see some really progressive things happening in regards to this war, or we may actually see her backpedal.
Yeah, and that's a concerning. That's a really concerning part, because if that is a speech that if we close the DNC, and which we did, and that was her message.
No, Taylor Swift. Sorry.
And that's her message when she gets elected. Because let's really hope that she gets elected. That's as much as she has to do, because that's what she said. So really the work is from here till election day, mm-hmm, of making sure that there's some speech, something that can be held accountable, mm-hmm, for that really right for self-determination and for peace for everybody that lives in that region. But that was obviously the biggest thing. Now, there were some people that I asked actually this question in, mm-hmm, the Slo County for Kamala group, mm-hmm, like, what was the thing that people thought was missing, mm-hmm, right? Because there's, mm-hmm, excitement out there. Everyone's, yeah, going to come out. People are organizing. There's postcards, all of this. Mm-hmm. And there are people that talked about, like, disabilities being, like, mm-hmm, top of mind. And again, it's the same thing as immigration. It's not enough to get people with disabilities on the stage. It's not enough to get Dolores Huerta on stage. Let's, mm-hmm, talk about policy, because we are able to talk, mm-hmm, about policy on so many other topics. Let's talk about policy for people with disabilities, which, if you are listening, please ask any and every candidate that you know or are talking to if they have a platform on disabilities and what does that look like, and accessibility and justice for people with disabilities. So,
but you know what, Rita, I'm hopeful.
You pull me out.
You know, I'm hopeful because of, I think one person that I was just, I think my favorite person that spoke was actually Coach Waltz.
Really?
Yeah, because I feel for someone that I did not know who this man was. I had no clue, right? And all of a sudden it's like, it almost feels like an arranged marriage, right? It's like, oh, who is this person, right? And now here we're writing together.
Dude, you showed me that picture of him holding that little pig and...
Oh my God, what is there not to love?
I'm getting married.
And I've been loving more and more this man. And, yeah, and to tying it to what you're saying is, yeah, you know, his son getting really emotional.
Yeah.
While his dad is speaking. Yeah. And this, I think, once again, I operate on optimism. You just have to read that, because it's like there's just so much ugly in the world.
I operate on rage. So.
On rage. Okay. Today she's choosing violence, and the day hasn't even really started. So watch out if you see Rita on the street. But you know, he has a son with a disability.
Yeah, I think
right? That's what gives me hope, Rita, is, yeah, that I would like to think that everyone that goes into the political world, even with a lot of the red tape, a lot of the dancing, a lot of today it's green, tomorrow it's yellow, and, mm-hmm, then I never said that, or I'm changing, yeah, my mind. But I think I would like to think that most politicians go in it for a purpose, for a reason. And what better purpose, mm-hmm, and reason than something that is close to you, like your son with a living disability, and to, yeah, be able to create legislative progress to how to impact a person's life because of that lived experience as a, yeah, parent with a child with disability. So
you're right.
I'm hopeful.
Yeah. No, I thought you were going to reach deeper, but I'm glad you didn't have to. I'm glad you didn't have to, because it is obvious, and hopefully that's what happens with disability. But I think there were some people that, most people talk about the Palestinian voices, they answer with disabilities. They also talked about the fact that we did not paint Donald Trump as the dictator, as in as the incompetent person that he is, because he really, like, you could really talk about how creepy, how rapey.
Do you think that was intentional?
I think there should have been a little bit more of that, you know?
I think, you know, if you compare the Republican convention to the Dem convention, it was different, right? They went heavy. They went heavy on the fear. They went heavy on the, like, on the negative.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the Dems, I think they hit it on the nail that they rode on hope, on unity, that if Kamala wins, she's going to be a president for all people, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of really creating that healing process of what we have gone through. Because the reality too, Rita, is this is where we're at right now is a byproduct of back when Hillary and Trump are even running. Mm-hmm. And then you get this man into office, and then we experience, it's almost like the U.S. has, we've seen the meme. We've been in an abusive relationship, and now we're getting the courage to shake out of it. And we can focus on the trauma and the real ugliness of what has happened, which is very real. It's there, right? Mm-hmm. But I also feel like people want, I think the messaging, Rita, is yes, Americans are struggling. Inflation is real. Gas prices have been real. Providing meals has been real. Mm-hmm. We have people who are mentally also really, really struggling on that front. The country is divided on a racial note. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the Dems were spot on to injecting that sense of hope and saying, hey, it hasn't been great, but we need to have all hands on deck, which was, you know, having the Republican folks show up and seeing a diverse, as I know we could have had more diversity, but, you know, it's a work in progress.
Yeah. And, you know, to anyone that is also disappointed about things that we're missing, I think that's what I'm holding on to, is that we are not here. Let's nobody never put all of our hopes into one election, into one candidate, because that is a mistake. People think that everyone's putting their hopes on the next, like, oh, it'll be better. No, no, no. Let me tell you, this is not... November comes, Kamala gets elected, there's a Harris-Waltz administration sworn in January. The threats, the discrimination, the divide, all of that stays here, and we have to continue working for it. So the election is just an event out of the many things that are going to happen in the next decade, and we got to keep focused. And the election is just one thing. Don't put all of your hopes into it.
And the reality is, and we've seen different movements happening on a local level or on a national level, that even when you have those wins, it's not, okay, we're done, pack up and leave. It's like the continuation, because we have seen, for example, with abortion, that what can happen in 4 years that leads up. And even with that specific topic, this didn't even happen in 4 years. It didn't happen in a year. This was chipping away intentionally throughout many, many years to get this result.
Focus, chipping.
If there's one big takeaway that you get from today's podcast, is that ask yourself, I love that question, what was missing? What has been missing? What is a topic that you are passionate about? It could be the environment. It can be animals. It can be disability. Mm-hmm. And if you're really passionate about this, this is your call to action.
Yeah.
Start figuring out the alignment. What is happening on a local level with that? What's happening on a state level? What is happening on a federal level? What are those nonprofits that you can get aligned with? Who are those community organizers that are equally as passionate as you are? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if you feel like there's nothing there out there for you, then this is the time to start. Create.
Exactly. And I think that's what really the next decade has to be. It's creating, because we cannot get to 2035 and not have a 2025 project of ours, right?
Gosh.
Like, the fact that we are here today with no project like 2025 for progressive values, for the working people, like, that is a huge... that alone, I don't know why more people don't talk about it, that why don't we have one like that? Why don't we have something that is so... It's not like the Project 2025 shit that you're reading. Like, I'm with Kamala. I don't know how they put that in writing. But... that it shows hope for people and policy and a path on how do we get there, because that's where I'm with you, Yesenia. Like, we need to get involved with organizations that are going to be writing that project whatever year.
Things take
and we
time.
Can't wait 10 years. Mm-hmm. We have to, like, let's well, climate, do that for the next election.
Climate change is a big one. We're seeing it. Whether you're living in Texas, Florida, Hawaii, California. I mean, we're seeing that. Yeah. And that's something we cannot avoid, right? Like, we're literally, like, we are hitting in the stages of being doomed.
Yeah.
So.
And believe me, that is a conversation that we are having. Like, you're probably, if you're listening to this, that's a conversation that you're having, something that you have in your mind. The other option, the Republican Party right now, they're not recognizing that there's an issue at all with climate. I was having this argument. I don't know why I do this to myself on Facebook. This lady that does not believe, that says that humans have evolved to be ready for this climate change. And I was like, okay, let's take the positive. Them. You believe in evolution. I'll take that as a positive. Let's unpack that. Let's unpack it. But still, no, people don't believe. People think that we were in the same earth, humans, with dinosaurs. This is who we're talking about. Even though there were 65 million years in between, this is what we're... Like, so when we're telling you about climate change, please remember that the other party just does not believe in any science.
It's scary out there, Rita. There's definitely a lot to work on. So look at your passion, ask yourselves, talk to your friends. If you're not passionate about anything, reach out to your one friend that is passionate, that is out there on Facebook debating people. Yeah. And just check in with them and see how you can be supportive, because a lot of it is, I understand we're living in a really busy time where people are just trying to survive. I get that. Yeah. But even maybe making that commitment that instead of getting, you know, your coffee or your croissant or your pan dulce, your tamalito once a week, that you're going to make that donation to a cause, even a local nonprofit, you know, that is creating safe spaces and fostering positivity and change at a local level. Like, I know national politics can be overwhelming, but there's so much to do. So just get involved, ask the questions, make the phone calls. If you don't know, just keep on asking until you get to where you want to be.
Yeah. We got to invest in community, because there's really no other way out of this. And invest in those organizations that are really part of policy conversations, that are really working to put the community's needs front and center. Like, those are the organizations that really need you right now. So let's do it.
Vámonos to the window, to the walls. Yes.
Hello. We are back at Chicas Políticas. We are doing a very, very special episode today because you just heard me and Yesenia doing an episode about the DNC and kind of recapping. But right now, we're going to go into a very special conversation with a dear friend of ours, Ana Rosa Rizzo Centino, who has driven into Slo County today. So we're going to make it worth your time, Ana Rosa, and really get into the tea, because you are a chica política, too. But we haven't had you here in the podcast. So let's start with the intro. So everyone gets to know you. We don't have Yesenia right now, so it's going to be the two of us. Ana Rosa, tell us about you.
Well, I come from a working class family from Southeast LA. My family's originally from Guadalajara, Jalisco, so immigrant family, and grew up with a lot of love. And my parents really showed me the importance of showing up for your community. And so that's what gave me the motivation to also do that myself in my life. I would say my first big campaign was with the United Farm Workers when I was a fresh woman in UCSB. I got to be the boycott coordinator for the Pick Sweet Mushroom boycott at the ripe young age of 18. And it took my whole college career to win that campaign. But I still work for the, well, actually back then I was a volunteer, and now I work for the United Farm Workers.
Wow, nice. So, look at that. Yeah. Shout out to the United Farms Workers.
Yeah, CSIP with it.
Yeah. And now you're also working for Greenpeace.
Yes.
Right, which you're not representing here.
No.
But you, like, that is just so awesome. How cool. Like, anyone listening to this is probably like, what? Like, you work for Greenpeace? That is really, really cool.
Yeah, I love it. They really believe in strengths-based leadership, which I love, because not every workplace does that.
Yeah.
And there is a union there, which I heard if I make it past my, you know, introductory 6 months that I will be part of that union. So I'm excited about that.
That's cool.
Because I think that nonprofits, just like any other workplace, should have unions. You know, unions protect us. And whether you hate your workplace or you love your workplace, either way, it's great to have a union.
Yeah. So, yeah. Oh, that's so cool. I didn't know. I hadn't even thought about it. That's awesome. But you've been doing a lot of organizing since those college years. What are like the biggest highlights of your organizing career?
Ooh, well, my first job out of college was as the national coordinator of the Student Labor Action Project for Jobs with Justice and the United States Student Association. So with that job, I got to travel all around the country and a little bit of international travel supporting students and training them how to support worker campaigns, whether it be on their campus or in their community. And I also got to work with unions to really encourage that reciprocity and get them to support student fights, like fighting tuition hikes and things like that. So just being able to interact with so many amazing people all over the place really showed me that even though we get really frustrated with all of the oppression, whether it be racism, sexism, classism, that everywhere that there is oppression, there's also people resisting it, you know? Yeah. And so that's the beauty of it.
And there's a beauty in it, right? There's like a joy. There's such a, this is something that we talk with Yesenia, that even though we're really mad about certain things, there's also a joy in their realization that we're not alone and that we can both have the same feelings towards something that maybe others don't share. And that our shared experience, it's also some like lovely to find.
Yeah, it's the beautiful struggle, as we say.
Yeah, it is. And in that struggle, I think it's where we've met you. And like, you know, we've had, I think, this friendship, you know, we met each other in the context of climate.
Yes.
Which is something that you're obviously passionate about. Are you still very involved, not just with Greenpeace, but maybe outside of Greenpeace too?
Yes. Well, I grew up in Southeast LA in a city called Maywood, which is a very impacted community as far as environmental racism. Mm-hmm. We're almost exclusively Chicanx, Latinx community, and we are right next to a city that's almost exclusively industrial, which is called Vernon. And so, you know, when you would turn on the tap of the water, it would be brown, like iced tea.
Yeah.
So like when you hear about Flint, Michigan, it's not only far away places like that, it's actually within California, too, that things like that happen. Also really terrible air. The Exide battery recycling plant, you know, just was found to have caused extreme amount of lead poisoning to our community. I and my whole family had to get tested for lead. Apparently we do have lead, but it's under the level that it should be worried about, which for me is like any level of lead in my blood, I am worried about.
So,
I mean, climate and environmental racism, environmental justice issues are very near and dear to my heart. But also working class, being from a working class family makes me feel very passionate about economic issues and working class issues in general. So that's why I feel very strongly about unions and workers' rights.
Yeah, and it's all connected, right?
Yes.
There's like no issue. And I actually, Labor Day is just coming this Monday, and I remember a union organizer who said, you know, the companies are most likely to not respect laws around climate are also the companies that are most likely not to want to have unions, right?
Yes.
So it's like the same kind of perpetrators, but the issues also are interconnected.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it all goes back to capitalism.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the system that we're forced to live into, but I think there's some resistance. It just sucks. It kind of takes us into the politics of now, right? There's like waves of that resistance to the current system. And we have seen it before, but there's also waves of resistance to the resistance, right? Mm-hmm. There was like a big Bernie Sanders movement in 2016, very strong one. Hillary Clinton was given the nomination. And then we got Donald Trump as a winner of that election. And now we're kind of here. I'm honestly seeing it all over again, right?
Where it's a pattern where they're silencing people.
Exactly.
First it was Bernie Sanders, now it's folks who are standing up against the genocide.
Yeah. And even against like, I was just watching the latest interview that Kamala Harris had given, and
She was defending fracking. And I don't know, I haven't been into the fracking science for like 2 years maybe, but has anything changed in the last 2 years?
No, no, not at all. And it trips me out because even folks who are not super in the know about climate, mm-hmm. they at least know that fracking is bad. You know, like actually being pro-fracking is a very extreme position to take.
Right, like defending fracking.
Yeah, it's very strange. Also, the fact that she's still... is not trying to fix the immigration system.
Oh my gosh, immigration was very, very... So let's go into that because Yesenia and I just talked about the DNC and what and the speeches and some of the policies that were mentioned, what was missing from the DNC, what voices were not featured, what policies were not featured, most importantly. But we were also talking about how we have lost the debate on immigration. Like, Democrats have lost the debate on immigration, right? We are not talking about paths to citizenship anymore. We're not talking about DACA. We're not talking about protecting our undocumented neighbors. We're talking right now about border security, which is the rhetoric that, yeah, Republicans were using just like 4 years ago. Now we're in that position. And this latest interview... You know, I know there's a lot of people that are probably listening to this that are big, big Harris supporters, and they know what we're going to get if we get Donald Trump in office. This is not a conversation about that, right? We're really talking about the nuances and how to keep our elected officials accountable and how to get the D's and the R's out of the conversation, but really talk about the policies that are at the table. And the interview really made it so... Kamala and the snippets that are being shared, most importantly, and the bar that she is setting is that we're seeing immigration as people just not respecting immigration laws mm-hmm. and being stronger on those immigration laws. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, first of all, let me say how frustrating it is that whenever we raise any issues, people want to make it this very limited, tiny conversation about, well, it's either fascism or not.
Exactly.
But no, like, especially when we're already having fascist policies under Democratic leadership.
Exactly.
And, you know, not too long ago, we were talking about kids in cages.
Oh my gosh.
And under Biden, there's still kids in cages, but now people are using your prettier words to describe the cages.
Yeah.
But it's still kids in cages.
And I don't want to get us too far away from the question, but I just saw a report that there are thousands of kids that are unaccounted, like kids that unaccompanied minors mm-hmm. across the border that were allowed as they should have into the U.S., but now no one knows where they're at, which is, hello, isn't that like... potential human trafficking happening, and no one really knows where these kids are at, and no one cares. No one's sounding any alarm because they're brown kids, right?
Well, and I think we see the connection there, right, between the lack of care for brown kids in this country versus the lack of care for brown kids abroad.
Yeah.
You know, it's racism, however you want to cut it.
Yeah.
And the fact that we cannot, at the very least, care about children
I know.
Is astounding to me as a mother.
Yeah, same. I think every time that I see a kid in Gaza that is about the same age as my kid, I immediately can connect, no matter what. I can connect to so many other realities, right? But that one is something that my heart just cannot ignore or avoid. I mean, I guess we kind of know where that stems from and the origin of the country as well, but have you seen anything that indicates to you that that perception will change in the next few months or years?
I mean, I think it has to. For me, I couldn't ignore the issue. My firstborn passed away when she was 3 days old, and, you know, I was doom-scrolling and seeing all the footage coming from Gaza, and there was this one scene where there were these babies on a table that were trying to be resuscitated and they couldn't be, and that's literally exactly, like, it took me right back to that moment that that exact same thing happened with my daughter, of them trying to resuscitate her and her not coming back. And I said, if people cannot understand this pain, there's nothing that they can understand. And so if we have to stay focused on saving lives, and I think that's part of what gets me and the hypocrisy of it all, that Republicans are fine, you know, like letting this genocide and multiple genocides continue, while caring about supposedly being pro-life.
Oh my gosh.
You know, like, it makes no sense to me for someone to say that they're pro-life and be fine with genocide. Yeah. Like, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
I just, I felt like I had to point that out because it's very frustrating. And we cannot continue, like, the more that we play into their politics,
yes,
the more the Democratic Party is not going to mean anything anymore. Yeah. You know? For me, I used to be Green Party, and I, you know, wanted to try to be Democrat because I was running for office, and, you know, people don't tend to vote for Green Party candidates for some reason. I did win as a Democrat, but for me, it wasn't so much the party. It was, like, the fact that we knocked on every door. And so I'm like, maybe that's just what we have to do. We have to have a massive door-knocking campaign all over the country to bring it back to the basic issues.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, I think I'm probably perceived as a radical or a leftist, but I don't think that there is anything that radical or leftist about wanting every human being to have basic things like housing, food, you know, a good job that doesn't exploit them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we even look at our own state of Gavin Newsom and, you know, people seeing him as this big environmentalist and, you know, leftist guy, but then he's doing things like cracking down on homeless or houseless encampments, which is like, and he even took the effort to go and like help remove the things.
Do from like a PR campaign.
It's so strange. Like, it's almost like Democrats are trying to show how evil they can be.
Yeah, it's talking definitely to a middle without understanding who the middle is, right? Mm-hmm. Because right now the middle is not... it's not applauding those actions, right? The middle is really saying, hey, you're not listening, and you're doing this weird PR campaign of cleaning shopping carts and mattresses for people that have absolutely nothing. It's not helping me, right? It would be by, and I mean, Gavin Newsom has amazing campaigns, but there are things that we can definitely criticize, like what he did with the encampments. I know he's also not being supportive to some union work happening in California. Mm-hmm. Farm workers had to protest all the way to Sacramento. There are times where gets pretty ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But we should be able to criticize that, right? And that's something that I think maybe some of our listeners, I feel like they would struggle with, because we're not necessarily jumping on the bandwagon of like, let's go. And even though we do like, you know, we do like some of the things that we are seeing happening, it's really hard to not be concerned of the situation. And I think there's a lot of also young people that are feeling that way, like newer generations that are like, don't even want to go vote, which is extremely, extremely concerning. Can you talk to a little bit about the campaign that you had and how running for office went for you? Because I do want to talk about local politics too.
Yeah, I mean, for us, it was before defunding the police was even a term that was out there, but our police department was just really out of pocket, doing really messed up things. Like, they would...
And where was this?
This is in Maywood. They were taking immigrants' cars, but they would call it DUI checkpoints, which was ridiculous because they were doing them at, like, 3 o'clock in the afternoon in the middle of the week when people are picking up their kids from school. So it really was to tow immigrants' cars. Back then, it was when Jerry Brown was attorney general, so he actually had to investigate the city. You know, when certain things were found, like, the police department had a deal with the tow truck company that our city contracted, that the police officers who towed the most cars would get all expenses paid trips to Las Vegas.
What?
Yeah. Like, stuff that people say only happens in other countries, it was happening, like,
you know. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so we, it was the first time that two women ran for office together in my city. And I think I'm the youngest woman to ever win for city council, because at the time I was 27. And my running mate is Salvadorian, Veronica Guardado, and we actually took out an incumbent who had been there for, I think, a minimum of like 12 years. And he was one of the city council members that was responsible for that crooked deal with the tow truck company and the police department. So yeah, we won, and they tried to recall us because the recall laws in the state are
ridiculous. So you both got elected in.
We both got elected.
Wow.
Yeah, so we were able to form a progressive majority, and we actually, because the police department was costing the city so much money as far as insurance costs, we were able to make a case for the fact that it should no longer exist. So yeah, we got rid of our police department.
No way. Yeah. Wow, what year was this?
I want to say 2010.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was before all the discussion about defunding the police.
Yeah.
We also planted 1,000 trees. We doubled the park space in our city.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so
that How was long really were cool. you there for? The
city One council? Term, but it was very exhausting because since I didn't trust anything happening in City Hall or the police department, and I door knocked every single house, I was literally giving out my cell phone number to the whole city. So, you know, my now husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, I think at some point he became my fiance, but he can attest to you that my phone was just like literally ringing off the hook all days. And these are positions that are supposed to be part-time, but because of the level of BS that we were up against, it ended up really being like a full-time job. Luckily, I lived in the house that I grew up in, so my parents were my landlords, and they said, you know, while you're in office, you don't have to pay rent.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
So, you know, because we only got paid $347 every 2 weeks. So.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And the amount of things, the topics that you have to become an expert with every month is just outstanding. I have so much respect for anyone that runs for office. Because
you should run for office.
No. I have a little one. I'm drowning right now. But some people have asked me that too. And I have so much respect for the position that I would want to be like really, really ready to make sure that I am available
but
to the community.
But you're never really ready. You know, and that's the thing. I
want to know more about that. What do you mean you're never really ready?
Well, it's like being a mother. Are you ever really fully ready to
that's
be a mother?
True.
You know, like you kind of, it's a learning process as you go. And for me, when I first got approached by the community organizations in my city to run for office, I was like, hell no. And I kept saying hell no, but they kept asking me over a period of 2 years. And finally, what got me to say, yes, I'm going to commit to this is that one of the community leaders showed me a picture, actually several pictures of what the police had done to his son. They had completely beaten him up. He was bruised all over his body. And I was like, okay, I get it. You know, like we need to stand up against this. So that's what finally took me over the edge to deciding to run. And it was a completely grassroots campaign. It was all environmental and labor folks who got behind us, community folks who got behind us. Mm-hmm. All of the evil forces united, like the polluting companies in our next door city.
Oh, yeah, they come out.
The crazy developers, the police association, like they all rallied against us and tried to get us recalled once we were elected. But the city, because it's the nice thing is it's not very large by area, so it's only 1 square mile, but it's also also the most densely populated city west of the Mississippi.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, lots of apartment buildings. So they thought they were going to be able to lie to people about us, but because we had already knocked on every door, it's different getting a flyer about somebody versus actually talking to someone. Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They were not able to successfully.
Plus, they were calling you on the phone.
Exactly. Like, hey, we just got this thing.
Oh my goodness. And so what did you take from that experience? Because we always talk, you know, I know there's a lot of people out there that some of them might be listening, but I've heard so much of this feeling of, you know what, I'm just really disappointed by and concerned, right, by what they're hearing from the Harris Walz campaign. And they obviously don't want to support a Trump presidency. But they just don't know what to do and they don't want to vote. And, you know, something that we have been saying is that there's going to be, like, the November ballot is going to be really, really thick. There's going to be, like, measures and, like, all these other offices. There's, like, so many governor races in every state. There's city councils, school boards. How important do you think it is to vote for those smaller local offices?
Yeah, I think voting down ballot is super important. I think what's closest to us is most important, like your city council, your school board, all of that has the most direct impact on your daily life. Yeah. And a lot of times there are much more inspiring candidates running at that level because they don't have to play to what they think is the middle of the road, like everywhere else. And, you know, I feel like even if you're not inspired to vote for president this time around, because, yes, it does matter that she's a Black woman and she's a South Asian woman, but if her policies are not reflecting what you stand for and you're not inspired to vote for president, and, you know, then don't forget that there are so many other positions in your area that you can be voting for, for people that do reflect your values.
Yeah.
And that way it's not just that you didn't vote, you know, because there's a difference between being silent and actually still exerting your rights.
And there are some races even that have been, you know, where even some elections where there haven't been that many of races, but even leaving one of the races, like, as, you know, empty without voting, that is still shown in the numbers of the undervote. And I have been in rooms where candidates are looking at that undervote too. Even candidates that have won, candidates that have lost, and they're paying attention of how many people just didn't want to give a vote, even if the alternative is, like, really bad. Now, what do you think about people that live in California that are saying, look, my vote doesn't matter for president anyway, so I'm not voting? I always feel like that's a privilege that we have here in California, kind of, you know, counterintuitive privilege, because our votes should matter equally as across the country, but it doesn't. But it kind of, I don't know how I would feel if I was in a swing state and my vote really, really, really could make a difference. I don't know. Have you ever thought about that?
I have. I mean, first of all, we have to abolish the Electoral College. It's completely undemocratic. But even if you are in California, I still think you should vote, especially if you do care about third parties. Like, maybe this is your chance to vote for a third party candidate that you care about, you know, because there are some pretty impressive people out there, like Cornel West, like Jill Stein. I forget the name of the candidate for the socialist. Do you remember her?
I don't remember.
Karina, I think. But yeah, there's, like, very impressive candidates. So at least if you don't want to vote for what you think are just the two options, don't forget that there are other options other than those two main options.
Yeah, that's true. I think there's some also, anytime that I'm thinking about voting, how much my vote matters or doesn't for a specific race. I'm also thinking, like, those red states, like the communities in the red states, those that cannot access, like, for example, reproductive rights and have to drive out of their state. Have you been talking to people in those red states, how they're feeling?
I haven't yet, but I know that that's something that the Working Families Party is working on a lot. So, and the Working Families Party, they do believe in building a third alternative in a grassroots way, because a lot of the other candidates, they kind of do it from the bottom, excuse me, from the top down. So the Working Families Party is trying to do it from the bottom up, so that it becomes like a groundswell. So, like, there have been very strong Working Family Party candidates in New York, in Oregon, and now they're building more in California, but in other states, and right now they're trying to focus on those red states. So if you're looking for somebody to volunteer with, that's a good one.
Yeah, I have been hearing really great things about the Working Families Party, and just how I feel like it's honestly talking to that third party, or those quote-unquote independents, of the cost of living, access to healthcare, unionizing. You know, we had our friends from Germany visit just 2 weeks ago, and we were talking about how long they've been traveling through the U.S. They've been here for, you know, they're going to be here for almost a month. And we're like, wow, that's like a long time. And they're like, yeah. And, you know, they were humble about it. They didn't know how much of a vacation time people here get in the U.S. And they said, yeah, we get only like 5 to 6 weeks, so we're going to be using probably most of it. And I was like, you get 6 weeks of vacation time? And they looked at us and said, how much do you get? And I'm like, well, when you first get a job, you usually get 1 week. And their faces, like, their jaws just dropped.
It's
like,
ridiculous. Yeah.
What are you going to do in a week? And, like, that's what they asked us. And we're like, that's, like, the usual that you get when you first start. And if you're lucky, you get 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And they were like, what?
Yeah.
And then I asked them, how long... how much time off or pay time do you get after you have a kid? Because they have two kids. And they said that they get, employers have to retain that job. So they have to have the job secure for when they come back, and they have to do it for 3 years. 3 years. So if you have a baby and you leave, you know, because you have to take care of your kid, you can still have that job after 3 years.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean,
can you imagine that happening here in the U.S.?
It needs to. That's why I'm saying, like, the fact that these people in power are limiting our conversation to be this tiny conversation about fascism or not. I'm like, yeah, I actually want to be talking about having 3 years off to raise my kid. I want to be talking about having 6 weeks vacation.
Exactly.
That's what an actual, like, pro-worker, pro-family, right? Because the Republicans are, you know, very famous for talking about families and, like, those kind of rights. It's like, well, that's actually what's pro-family, to have time to spend with your family.
Yeah.
You know.
But I feel like employers here would just, like, go nuts about the idea of having to retain a job for 3 years. Like, if 3 months, sometimes I feel like I'm hoping that someone can understand that I need to be gone for 3 months.
Yeah. But
3 years, it really revolutionized or something. It's insane. They were also telling me that in Germany, so you get 3 years, but you get 80% paid the first year. You can divide it the first year and second year, and the third year you don't get paid, but then, you know, you still have your job. And then you can also now divide it between you can choose the mom or the father or one partner or the other who gets the time. But it's still pretty big amount of time that you can step out of your job to take care of your kids. And, you know, they were saying how expensive childcare is in Germany, and they were telling us the amounts. And I was like, that's how much it costs here, too. Yeah. And we don't get the 3 years.
Right.
Yeah. And I actually was here, and I remember this because the Working Families Party was, you know, some of the things that they were talking about in the videos that I have been seeing were very much centering families and family needs that are so, that we mentioned in the podcast, but we are not hearing about them enough at the DNC or in, I feel like Michelle Obama was the one that got the closest to that sentiment, but the policies are just not catching up, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, the one bright spot of the whole DNC that I saw is Kamala Harris's commitment to building 300 million homes in her first term, which that's quite an ambitious goal. And if, you know, if she wins and she is able to do that, that would be huge. But yeah, I mean, the conversation, again, is larger. And, you know, I spent some time in Brazil and I got to meet Lula when he was running for office for his first term. And he comes from the PT, Partido del Trabajador, and I was there also when they had their big march. And when I tell you, like, this march, you could not see the end of it. It went for miles. And that's because they've been able to effectively build coalitions with all of the left-leaning parties and groups in Brazil. That's how they were able to get Lula elected. And it's like, if we can think on that scale to do here, but everyone is so, like, ready to argue and, like, pick apart every single thing, that it's hard to see how we will be able to build that coalition.
Right.
Unless we start doing some restorative justice with each other, you know? Because I think we want to have this beautiful community, but we have no skills around restorative justice or transformational justice.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense, because people are going to argue. They're going to have, you know, grudges for some reason from something that happened 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But, like, how are we going to build the world that we want to live in if we can't get over that stuff?
Yeah. 100%, 100%. And we see it especially in, like, our community here in Slo County. It's so little that, you know, those grudges, like, hold strong. And, you know, trying to get the same people involved for different things. Yeah, I can totally see that. But the best examples have been, and I think that's what I'm holding on to this season from here till November, but past November, is that it is a marathon. And I honestly, I'm starting to see this election as, yeah, it could be historic in the sense that we could have the first female elected president, or we could have the first woman of color. And all of those things are important on its own. But I am also seeing it as it's also an election like the one that we had with Obama, right? It was historic on for its purpose. But Obama also had the most amount of, you know, immigrants detained at the border. So, and it's a cycle, like you said. It's a pattern that we have to really focus in community to be able to break.
Well, I think Obama wasted a lot of time trying to build relationships with Republicans. That's not what I'm talking about. Like, people who are going to be anti are going to be anti. But I'm talking about people where we're more aligned on our politics and worldview, where we care about people having the basics, right? Yeah. And, like, having a decent standard of living. Like, we should be building larger coalitions.
Yeah.
Because I think part of what was cloudy with Obama is, like, people wanted to pretend that that meant that racism was over, you know? Like, having a black man for president. And, you know, with having a black woman for president, I'm afraid that people will go back into that blind sense of, like, oh, that means we don't see color anymore.
Yes.
Which couldn't be further from the truth, because the most people were killed by police in 2023. And right now in 2024, we are on that same trend to actually exceed 2023 numbers. Yeah. And who are the most of the people being killed? They're mostly black folks or mostly people of color.
Yeah.
Or folks who have autism or other kinds of, you know.
The intersections, right?
Yeah, so the intersections are there. So that's what I believe in strongly, is like having intersectionality in our politics.
Yeah.
Because only then will we create the world that we want to see, or as the Zapatistas say, the world where many worlds fit.
Yeah, 100%. And Rosa, you're such an inspiration. We're so lucky to have you, you know, join us. And you have your own podcast, right?
I do, yeah. It's called Que Madre.
Yeah. What do you do at Que Madre? What do you talk about?
Well, I mean, it's kind of coming from a matriarchal
love world. Tell us more.
Well, because I feel like if you look at most of our indigenous communities, they were led by matriarchal communities. So I think that Que Madre, it's actually gone through kind of a evolution, you could say. Like, in the beginning, it was very much focused on mothers who were balancing taking care of their families, but also taking care of their communities and taking care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that balance is even possible, I don't know.
No,
I feel like it goes up, it goes down.
Yeah.
You know, it's never really a perfect balance.
Yeah.
So it talked very much about like campaigns and different political issues. I think in the last year or two, we've been focusing more on mental and emotional health for not only like biological mothers, but caretakers in general, you know, because you could also not have your own kids, but be taking care of your parents or, you know. So we've been really focusing on what it means to fill your cup so that you can continue to pour out to others, because you cannot continue pouring from an empty cup. So that's really what we've been talking about. So Ali Cortez and Siobhan Hoover are my co-hostesses. The show first started with Jess Alvarez Parfrey, who had to move down to San Diego County, so she's not around anymore, but we are going to take a field trip to go visit her. But it's we've got like 5 or 6 episodes on Spotify, but it used to be a radio show.
Oh, right.
It's still a radio show too, so we're doing both. Our radio show continues, and we're also adding the element of a podcast.
Oh, got it. That's awesome. And can you give us some tidbits, some tips of the conversations that you've been having about filling your own cup first?
Well, first of all, that whole imposter syndrome, it's bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, that you are actually more qualified than is needed. It's just that you don't believe in your strength.
Yeah.
And it's really sometimes our light that intimidates us more than, you know, what we think our faults are.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, I mean, most communities are lucky to have us, you know, like as women of color. And you know, I feel like I say this often, I wish I had the confidence of a mediocre white man, because I feel like my life would be completely different. But it's something that I'm building, you know, now. It's taken me 44 years, but hey, I got here, baby.
So just like recognizing your amazingness.
And realizing that you're not alone, because your ancestors are behind you. You know, like we are our prayers. We are the prayers that our ancestors, our grandmothers and our grandfathers prayed for.
Yeah.
And so like being able to manifest that and know, like, who are we not to be brilliant when we have all these people that have survived horrendous colonization and, you know, brutality for us to be here.
Yeah.
So let's like try to build ourselves and our communities in the light that we want to see.
Yeah. Like, honestly, statistically, we shouldn't be here, right? Mm-hmm. We shouldn't be in the positions that we're in, and we are. So what do we do with that power? How are you filling your cup when such, you know, horrific images are coming from Gaza and now the West Bank? It's been like 3 days where Israel has been invading against international accords and just humanitarian law in general, but how are you filling your cup when you see that?
Well, before I answer the question of how I'm filling my cup, I just want to highlight the fact that Israel invading the West Bank is showing us how this rhetoric about it being a Hamas is bullshit, because Hamas is not in the West Bank.
Yeah.
So if you want to go on that tirade, then I'm sorry, but you're wrong, because that's not based in truth.
Yeah.
So
and they're destroying like infrastructure, like roads. They're literally cutting in half roads. Like, what is the purpose of that? The West Bank is completely surrounded by walls. Like, what could be the explanation related to Hamas by destroying roads inside the West Bank? There's absolutely no reason. Well, that's the
thing. Indigenous people don't destroy their own land. So let's say that. But I would say that the way that I'm filling my cup is hugging my daughter tighter and trying to show her every day how much she's loved and how much she has the freedom to be whoever she wants to be. Mm-hmm. And for me to kind of be her guide. For me, like, motherhood has been such a transformational journey, because I think until I had my babies, I didn't actually appreciate, like, how amazing my body, you know, is.
Yeah.
And the fact that, like, I just had this experience, especially with giving birth to Gloria. I found this amazing midwife midwifery was in her family for generations.
Oh, wow.
So she's Black, and she was able to... through that experience, almost like give my body back to me, because losing my firstborn was so traumatic, where like I had no sense of like wanting to live. And so to be able to see that, you know, through this sacred life-giving process, I have this beautiful human being who is like the reflection of all things good in this world. You know, it's like every single day I look at her and I'm like, wow, you came out of me. You know, like, and just like how she gets to be her own self and her own cool personality.
Yeah.
It's just like a miracle walking, you know, and it's also scary, because it feels like motherhood is having your heart just walking around, you know, outside of you.
Yeah.
I feel like just really appreciating the blessings, being in gratitude, because as terrible as everything is, I have to focus on what's good. Otherwise, I can't live another day to fight, you know. And I do want to keep fighting. I want to keep fighting until we build the world that we know that the humanity deserves.
And what advice would you be giving to anyone that might be joining a Labor Day celebration this weekend and potentially seeing their elected officials, and what do you think people should be telling them or asking them or talking to them? Because we know elected officials like to go to those Labor Day barbecues and give the speech and, you know, shake hands at that those celebrations. So I'm thinking we're going to be seeing some of those this weekend. What advice would you give to voters?
Well, politicians are usually the reason why I don't want to go to Labor Day parades. Because I really just want to go to see my sisters and brothers in unions, but knowing that they're going to get up there and say that they've always been for workers' rights and, you know, they're doing all they can. Just a reminder that politicians are not celebrities, even though there's this whole Trump cult thing going on. Like, I feel like Trump has almost changed the way we all see, like, politicians into treating them as celebrities, but we need to be holding them accountable, because they're actually public servants. They're not celebrities. So public servants need to be accountable to us. We need to ask them what they're doing on housing, what they're doing for workers, you know, what are they doing for like basic living wages that we should have in this area, which we definitely don't have, because most people cannot afford a home. It's even hard to even rent, you know, at this point. So, I don't understand, especially in the state, this crackdown on houseless encampments when, you know, most of us are actually one paycheck away from being houseless ourselves.
Seriously. Yeah. And to be honest, like, a lot of the cracks in our system and just how in danger we all are is reflected in those experiencing homelessness and the systems that got them there, right? Like from violence, from not protecting kids, from mental health services not available, from not recognizing hormonal changes in people's bodies that need to be addressed, from a healthcare system that has failed us, from real estate, you know, lobbying, trying to make housing more expensive, from All these different protections that we don't have in this country that have given us the issue that we have with housing and mental health services and health services in general. I was actually talking to these German friends, and I asked them, like, well, was there anything, like, what was the highlights, or what were the kids saying when they went to Disneyland? And the first thing they said, actually, when we were going into Disneyland, they saw some people that were homeless outside Disneyland, and they asked, we don't have that in Germany. And they asked, why are they on the streets? Like, why are they dirty? Why do they have all those things with them? And they couldn't answer. And I remember, like, when I go back to Peru, we don't have that either. Like, yeah. My mom came to visit, said, like, she felt so bad that there were so many people that didn't have housing and that didn't have anyone taking care for them. Mm-hmm. So the reality that we are now living, you know, and made to believe that it's natural, that it's the way the world works. It is not the way the world works. This is not... This
we are
is
an
not
abomination.
What you're
saying. This country is an abomination. It's not the leader of the world like we like to pretend.
Exactly.
Like, of the 33 industrialized countries, 32 have universal health care. We are the one that does not.
Wow.
We are the one that does not. Like, yeah. Can that sink into you? Yeah. Like, everyone who's listening?
Yeah.
Like, there's no excuse. Why don't we have universal health care? We definitely have the resources because... Our resources are going to Israel to kill children.
To the different wars out there, right? To the defense contractors. Completely upside down budget. And I feel like that's another thing that people can bring up. It's like, why does our budget look like it does? Because anyone can say anything about what they're working on and who they're working for, like any politician. But if their budgets don't reflect that, if the funding that they are given doesn't reflect that, if they continue passing these... humongous at the Congress level, these humongous budgets that are all for defense and nothing for education, nothing for healthcare, then their words are meaningless, right? And at the local level, the same. Like, what are these elected officials funding and supporting funding for?
Well, and then let's talk about our military and how they prey on people of color to go join the military.
Yeah.
And then,
and low income.
Yeah, low income people of color. Low-income white folks, and then when they come back from going abroad and fighting whatever war we're asking them to fight, they are treated like crap. You know, so all these promises that this country tells them about, oh, this and that, you know, education
or vets, right?
Yeah, but it's not real.
Yeah, we are honestly living in a system that is very not real. And not enough of us are questioning. So definitely check out the Working Families Party if you're interested in what you've been hearing here today. I definitely will in the future. I want to know more about it. I've only, this week is, I think, the first time that I've heard about them, actually. So I'm very interested in knowing how it's organizing at the local level to hopefully at some point have more options at the national level. And if anything, just like with competition, hopefully provide more pressure on those big parties that don't have policies ready or that are not speaking to us. I'm honestly very, very concerned about immigration after that interview.
I am too.
Yeah. So hopefully this is giving everyone an insight into where our minds are at as chicas políticas, and also just the immigrant community as a whole, and those paying attention to healthcare, union workers, to climate, and all different topics that we've talked about. A lot of times I think immigrants are reduced to immigration, right? But there's so many things that we're passionate about, and all the issues are interconnected. So let's keep our elected officials accountable. Definitely vote. Don't miss that vote if you're hopeless. Don't vote. Don't miss that vote. This is a cycle. Don't make statues out of anyone. This election is not going to solve all of our issues. If anything, it doesn't end in November. So yeah, let's just keep building community. Thank you so much, Ana Rosa, for being here. Anything else that you would like to share?
Well, number one, thank you so much for the invitation to you and Yesenia for being here. I also... just wanted to reiterate, like, don't take immigrants for granted because we are the backbone of this economy. And if you like to eat, then you should be pro-immigrant rights because that food that you're eating, who was it picked by?
Yeah.
Probably somebody either Mexican or Salvadorian or, you know, some other immigrant from another country. So don't be a hypocrite.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Ana Rosa. Thank you everyone for listening. Bye.